Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste, and those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say, it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. This is the show where we discuss all things separation and getting a part of a nation, the territory of our own. Our motto is, if you cannot control the community that you live in, you should move to a community that you can control, a real community, not a virtual community, a community with real land, water, and air. I am not going to delay the show any. We have our guest host for tonight, our own sister, Niambe Muhammad, and I'm going to let her introduce her guest. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Niambe.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother Carlton. How are you?
I am well by the grace of Allah. And what about yourself?
I'm well by that same grace. Thank you so much for asking. On tonight's show, we have our dear sister, Sister Taquela Muhammad, the owner and CEO of ARC Survival Plus, a disaster preparedness surplus store. I will let Sister Taquela introduce herself. Brother Carlton, do you see her in the queue?
Sister Taquela, if you would press the 1 on your keypad, and that will bring you into the queue, and I can open your mic, and I think this is her.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Niambe.
Wa alaikum salam. How are you, dear sister?
Yes, ma'am. Doing well by Allah's grace and mercy. I pray the same for everyone on the call this evening.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. We are so excited to have you as a guest this evening on Time to Leave. And so we will not delay because there's a lot. We have a lot to discuss. And so we'll just jump right in if that's okay with you.
That's perfectly okay. Let's get started.
Yes, ma'am. So, Sister Sequela, tell us, please, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes, ma'am. Praise be for Allah. Well, my name is Sister Sequela Muhammad. I reside now in Atlanta, Georgia, but I previously lived in Memphis, Tennessee, as well as North Carolina, Charlotte, and Winston-Salem. So I am a traveler, and I'm a mother of six. And recently married as well, again, and enjoying a lot of beautiful blessings. And I am an owner of Ark Survival Surplus, which is a survival store. And the goal and aim and purpose is to help our people to prepare for the disasters that we are now seeing every day and making sure that we have the things and tools that we need on hand to be able to survive these disasters.
Yes, ma'am. Beautiful. Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction.
Yes,
all right. Well, Sister Sequela, I'd like to start off because some people on the call may not necessarily be aware of what disaster preparedness is. So can you just briefly tell us what exactly is disaster preparedness?
Yes, ma'am. Disaster preparedness is basically a form of preparedness and preparation for any type of disaster, whether it be a fire, a hurricane, a tornado, flooding, anything that can happen. And we know that we can't prepare for every single event that happens. But if you have certain basic items already stored in your home or your car or your workplace, those items will help you in the case of a disaster to be able to live longer, survive longer, or even make it through that disaster.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. All right. Well, what or how, I should say, how did you get started in disaster preparedness and or what inspired you to go? This is not your typical business. Especially for Black people. And it's not necessarily a business that's highly promoted. This is the kind of business you kind of have to go, you know, searching for.
Right.
So talk to us about how you got your start and what inspired you to start in a disaster preparedness business.
Yes, ma'am. Well, it started initially as a child coming into the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who've taught us about the disasters that will be striking America and, you know, the world that we're living in, and being prepared and how we can prepare and the things that we can store in our homes and on our persons. And my mom was an advocate of making sure, she was a mother of four, but she had to make sure that her children would be able to survive as well as her. So my mother actually inspired me as a child to prepare, because she always made sure that we had all that we needed when we were younger. Like, I thought when I was a child that the apocalypse was coming because of the way that my mom, you know, had the items and things stored. And as I grew up, I started seeing a lot of our community suffer from not having what we need to survive. A lot of times in our communities, we did not have the supplies. We didn't know how to get the supplies or get hold of certain things that will allow us to survive longer, like such as generators or cases or powers of water and things like that. So we always had the most of the suffering in our communities, and I felt like that was a need for us in our community. And so the passion of me speaking about it and getting it was in preparation for myself and my own children. So I started to prepare myself, my family, and I felt at one point I had like all that we needed to be able to get through whatever Allah was sitting down at that time, but I didn't think that that was enough if my family and my friends and the people around me would suffer because they didn't have what they needed. So I started to advocate that into other people, always talking about it, always telling them what they should get, and then people would ask me so many questions because I talked about it so much. And then I realized that it was needed. So then I also started having workshops in Memphis, Tennessee on a regular basis that would teach people in the community, in our community, the things that we needed to have in our homes. You know, how to start a fire, how to prepare, you know, how to build a go bag, just certain things that I knew that our people did not know. And it was successful. And then during those workshops, when I would display those activities or show them certain things or show them my go bag, at the end of the workshop, there was always people standing there asking me, can they buy the stuff that I had? And where did I get it from? And, you know, how can they get it? And I was like, wow. So then I started to start having a little store, like a little section where at the end of any of my workshops, I would start having those items for sale. And then I started selling out of the items. So I never went in there with the expectations to sell out. I just went in there with the expectations of having them on hand if needed. And when I saw that people was actually buying the things that I talked about and brought to their attention, I realized that that is a business. And it went from there.
Wow, that's very interesting. Wow. Okay, yes, ma'am. Now, you mentioned a go bag. And so I know what a go bag is, but, again, some of the callers on the line may not know. So if you could talk to us a little bit about what a go bag is and kind of at bare minimum, just, you know, somebody who's just starting out with trying to, you know, or just getting into disaster preparedness. So at bare minimum, let's start with the go bag. You know, tell us what that is, and then at bare minimum, what might one need to have? What are some of the items that they might need in their go bag?
Yes, ma'am. Perfect. Well, so a go bag is also, they call a bug out bag, which is basically a 2, 3, or 1 day supply of preparedness or survival items to get you from point A to point B in the case of an emergency or evacuation. And that's basically a backpack that contains some essential items for you to survive for the next few days. And so I always advise others to make sure it has basically food, clothing, and shelter pretty much. And then everything else can be built off of that. And then so you'll basically have your water and your edible items. You can do some dehydrated foods or some canned beans or some snack bars or certain things that you know will give you certain nutrition, high protein in your bag. You'll have a change of clothes or walking shoes if you're used to wearing like heels or something like that if you're working. And you'll do shelter. So I may put like a makeshift tent or a tarp or something in the bag. And then I tell everyone to go from there. And so you'll have other essential tools to open up cans, build a fire. You can have things in there for hygiene and sanitation. You can build it all the way up from there. It just depends on how long you're trying to survive and for those needs. And with those bags, it's just a temporary thing. So you don't want to overpack it with your whole life and things that are not important at the time. The time of having that bag is all about surviving for the next couple of days. So I just tell people to think about you living outside for 3 days and what you really need in that bag that will be an emergency essential item for you to be able to survive for those 2 or 3 days outside.
That last point, that was a very good point in stating that, you know, if you were to live outside for a few days, as a way of preventing people from overpacking. Because if you think about living outside for a few days, you're thinking about things that you would just absolutely need that you cannot live without. So that's very, very, very good point. Okay. And so just going a little deeper into that, because I'm thinking about, okay, you know, having a go bag in the car. But let's say, yeah, if you get out of your car, evacuate your car, you don't have a car, and you have to, now we typically, you know, we're not backpackers. Backpackers carry real heavy, you know, they got the tent in there, they got, that's a really big bag, you know, backpackers tend to hike mountains, so their stamina is there because they're used to, you know, walking and incline and walking for long periods of time, things like that.
Yes.
But we certainly are not used to those kinds of things.
Right.
And so if you have, say if you have a large family, or you're trying to encourage, you know, your family members outside of your immediate family to prepare for a disaster. Now, we're still talking about at a very basic level. Then what kinds of recommendations would you have for larger families?
Yes, ma'am. It would pretty much be the same thing, but it's, the great thing is it's a family activity. And so you don't have to go out and spend all this unnecessary money on getting the things for your bags. A lot of things can be found around the home. For example, I worked at MUI, and that was one of the projects for the children to pack a go bag and build a first aid kit. And so we went to, like, Dollar Tree and picked up some items for a dollar, maybe about $15 worth of stuff, $20 or something, that I was able to split up between the students, and they were able to break it down and put it inside of their first aid kit, like such as like cotton balls and like wet wipes and different things like that. So it is an activity for your children, but it's something that you definitely want to include your whole family and also have evacuations and practice with the backpack. Go if there's a local mountain in the city. We have Stone Mountain here, so with my children, that's something that I would like to do or do with them, is to have them wear their backpacks and walk up and down the mountain, or, you know, go to a park or somewhere where they're practicing carrying that bag with the weight that it actually is, and putting the things in it that they know, and telling them and teaching them what these items are used for in the case of an emergency. And then just even practicing outside, like you can camp outside in your backyard if you're able to do that, in the mindset. And like you mentioned about the hikers, a lot of them, they know that it's not really a, you know, they're surviving outside, but they know that it's not really a disastrous situation. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times if our mind doesn't go into the fact that we can be outside and it could be a permanent situation for us, we play around with it. So if we put it in our mindset that we may have to live outside for a couple of days. We may have to be under a tree or a rock or literally living in a tent for a couple of days. How are we going to survive? Are you going to be okay without a bathroom, maybe using tissue, using wet wipes? So getting them into that mindset of being acclimated to having to do that, to walk for hours to get to your next destination of survival or of safety, are they able to do those things?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Before we go deeper into, you know, preparing, how would one know if they're prepared appropriately as far as survival? Like, what would make one to know, okay, I have enough, that, you know, I'm prepared. If something were to happen, my family could survive.
Yes, ma'am. The biggest thing is going through it. A lot of times we don't know if we're really prepared like we want to be until we actually go through something. Just like for me, example, I went through a storm and I didn't have any power or any for a while. I don't know, I think it was a couple of days. I don't think we had no water. I think the stove was off, so I had to use my portable stove and my certain things in my little backpack and my little survival kit to be able to survive during that time. And I realized we were prepared, but I knew it was other things that I knew that we needed. For example, I had fuel, but I'm like, I'm using fuel like this, and I know that we're going to need more fuel. We're also going to need a pressure cooker on top of having canned food, because the pressure cooker cooks fast. So just going through it made me realize what all I needed as far as at home. And the same thing with having your backpack and camping out. You will have to test it. You will have to practice. You know, the same with your children, because you don't know what you or your children can endure. Some people can't walk after 10 minutes. They're already complaining and, you know, falling over and feeling like, okay, so if you're not practicing these things ahead of time, then you may not be able to get through it when it's something that's necessary. And a lot of our people think that they'll be able to, like, for example, if you're not fasting now, you can't say that during a disaster you're not able to eat for 2 or 3 days that you'll just be able to get through it, because it's going to be harder for you if you have not trained your stomach and your body to go without food. If you're used to doing certain things, it's not as hard, but it will be hard for you if you have not put yourself in a position to see if you are able to get through that time.
Yes, ma'am. Very good point. Okay, let's move into the home now. So, again, at a very basic level, what are some of the items that someone would need to store in their home who is just beginning to store things for survival?
Yes, ma'am. Of course, different seasons and different environments call for different things, but on basic level, you definitely want to have what we're told is 3 to 6 months worth of food. I always encourage people to get water, because even if the water system goes down, or if it doesn't, for example, the water could still be running, but it could be hazardous to drink. You want to have a supply of fresh water in your home so you don't have to run out and try to get water from the fourth to last minute. We've seen this happen recently, even with this current Hurricane Ida in New Orleans, where one of the sisters said she tried to run to the store for her children to get water, and she stood in line for hours and hours, and by the time she was able to get in, there was nothing left. She didn't have no water for her children. And her home wasn't destroyed, but she had no water. So those are the things that you want to make sure you have, and I look at it as 1 gallon per person per day. But if you have a lot of people in your home, you don't want to store up that much. Just have at least 30 gallons of water, I tell people, at bare minimum. And I sometimes get to 5 gallon jugs of water, and I will store those in my survival, not touch those. And then the cases of water I get, I'll rotate those. So you just want to make sure you have that. You also want to have perishable foods and non-perishable foods, such as your staple good items, such as maybe beans, the lentils, rice, flour, sugar, salt, those things already packaged up in Byler bags and put up and stored properly, because if they're not stored properly, there's no point in storing them, because you're going to end up losing or wasting half your product when it's time for you to actually go into those things to eat those things. The same with first aid kit, having a family first aid kit where, you know, you have what you need for your family, what fits your family. The things that you know as far as medicine, if anybody's on any prescription, you want to have a 30-day supply of medication. You also want to have just what Band-Aids and just certain things that you know. Like my family, I have a lot of children, so I would get like a lot of children's friendly things. I added like cough drops to my first aid kit at home. I got the Paxilin spray, just different things I added to my first aid kit that I know would be a necessity for that time to not have to go out unnecessarily.
Okay. All right. Yes, ma'am. And, okay, so you mentioned children, and that brings me to my next question. Before I ask my next question, one of the callers on the line asked, I can hear you just fine, but I don't know, for some reason, some people may not be able to hear, so they were asking if you could just stay close to the phone to make sure that they can hear you. Again, I can hear you just fine, so I don't know.
I can hear you fine, too. You sound real good, sis.
Okay, praise be to Allah. Thank you, Brother Carlson. And so you mentioned, you know, you yourself have children, and you being somewhat of an expert at this, what advice can you give in how to train your children in preparing for disaster preparedness? I know you mentioned, you know, just kind of getting them involved in the process, and that absolutely is important. But, you know, when it comes down, when that time arrives, you know, some people, sometimes there's panic. So not just getting them involved in the process of disaster preparedness itself, but making sure that when that time comes, there's no panic, they're calm. There's still a level of organization, if that makes sense. So what advice would you have for children or people that have children, especially, you know, there may, in a particular age range, you may have an infant all the way up to, you know, your an adolescent and teens. So what advice might you have for a family like that?
Yes, ma'am. Praise be to Allah. Same thing. First and foremost, having evacuations, working together as a family, talking about it, reading books about it, studying it together, watching, like for me, I watch movies with my children here and there about disaster, or I'll watch like some type of documentary or some type of series about certain things that I know that my children need. For example, death, drowning. Like I go in with my children. We watch it together, but I explain to them, you know, fire, like if there's a fire, like I watched one child escape a fire and I was teaching my children, like this is what happens during a fire, this is how high it is, this is how much time you have to get out, and then also having the evacuations on top of that, knowing that they know where to go, knowing that they know how to get out the house, knowing that they know that they're going to be okay to our children about it because we're afraid. You know, we don't want to talk about any impending doom coming on us in the world. We just want to live life as it is and just deal with it when it comes to us. But that's why a lot of children are afraid, because then when it hits, they have absolutely no clue what to do. With my children, we're always talking about it. Like, I guess I get on their nerves talking about it all the time, but I just want them to know that, it'll be repetitive in their mind that, okay, this is what mom said to do during this time. This is what she said to do. Let me think, and then it'll come to them. Okay, this is what we've been trained to do. This is what we were taught to do. This is what we practice, and it'll come to them. And I've seen children who have been prepared. They know what to do instinctively. Same with MUI, we have fire drills. The first few times, children all over the place. They didn't know what to do, which way to go. But the more that we practiced, all of a sudden we were able to get out there in less than 4 seconds. Everybody was up and out of the door, walking across the street, knowing what to do, quiet, ready. And so as a saying, I always get it wrong because of the P's. I think it was proper preparedness prevents poor performance, I believe is what it is. So if you are constantly preparing and practicing, then that will prevent poor plan.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Now, do you recommend, because, you know, many of us live in large communities. Sometimes we don't even know our neighbors. What advice would you have for those of us who might live in larger communities and as far as reaching out to your neighbors to make sure, because if I'm the only one in my neighborhood that's prepared for a disaster, that doesn't, you know, necessarily only, I mean, that kind of puts me in a dangerous position. You know, if you really think about it. So what would you say to those who may live in a, you know, a large community and, or, you know, like maybe even a community where there's a cul-de-sac, that kind of thing, our houses tend to be close together. What advice would you have for them as far as reaching out to their neighbors in the way of disaster preparedness, if that makes sense?
Yes, ma'am. Same thing, just having workshops in your community, also talking to your neighbors about it. We're talking to get to know our neighbors just so you can know what you have, because at the time of a disaster, your community, your neighborhood, is you all may have to pull together to help each other, help one another during that time. You may be stranded in that community, and it may be a doctor in the community. It may be a nurse. It may be someone that has a garden growing food. You can become a target, or you all can potentially work together to help each other through, you know, the disaster. So my last community before I moved here to Atlanta, I used to put out flyers. And in putting out those flyers about workshops and different things and just asking the questions, if someone would see me and they would look at the flyer, that would start a conversation as to, okay, so, where do I get this stuff from? And, you know, why this is a good idea? And you'll be surprised that some of the people are prepared, you know, but everybody's preparing themselves. You know, some of them do know what's going on, and they do have certain things in their home. But again, during that time, it's the fear that may kick in, and everybody's only man for himself, which is sometimes maybe how it has to be. But again, it's the biggest thing is just putting it out there, reminding them, just putting it on their mailbox or on their cars or something like that. Just to let them know, do you have these things in your house? Do you have a flashlight? Do you have enough water? Do you have a go bag? Because some people, you can warn them and tell them all day long, but some people are not going to prepare no matter what you say. So, you know, you just have to do what you can do and pray about it and just prepare the best possible way you can.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. We are now at the halfway mark, and this is normally the time during our show where we allow the callers to ask questions of our guests. For the Carlton, are there any callers in the queue?
Brothers and sisters, if you're enjoying this conversation and you have a question or a comment, now is the time to press 1 on your dial, and we will recognize you and invite you and let you participate in the conversation. And so we are still waiting, Sister Naomi.
Okay, right, thank you. So, Sister Tequila, while we wait for those questions to come in, what are some disaster relief organizations that when someone is involved in a natural disaster, what are some disaster relief organizations that they may be able to reach out to possibly for assistance?
Yes, ma'am. Well, the main two is Red Cross and FEMA would be the main two to reach out to. But there's, in certain cities, there are local places. They do have CERT, Community Emergency Response Team as well. And they help you also to practice. They have some types of workshops sometimes on 16 hours, so it'll be 2 Saturdays in a month where you go there and they'll train you. But they also have some relief stations and information about any disasters in the community or city. So those are the three that I know of off the top of my head.
Okay, yes, ma'am.
And we have a caller, Sister Niambe.
Right, great.
Caller with the last four numbers, 7338. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Mildred. I'm calling from Atlanta. And my question is, how long should you hold? I mean, how long should you, how long should you recirculate your product that you have?
Yes, ma'am. How long should you recirculate your product?
Yes. Anything that you have stored away for survival?
Yes, ma'am. For the most part, every year I will redo my survival bag and take out the things that have expired or are no longer in use, because most of the items that you do put in there will have an expiration date on it outside of just your clothes and things like that. So for example, if you tell yourself January 1st, you know, I'm going to pack my bag and put it up. Then the next January, you do the same thing if nothing's happened. Just to check the six-month mark, if you think that your food may have expired, you could check that. But I tried to put the food in my bag that I know will last at least a year. Like I said, you can do some jarred canned beans. You can do some dehydrated food or some freeze-dried food that you put in there, and those typically last for more than 5 years at times. So that's the most that you have to worry about, those and some type of like wet wipes and stuff. They dry out. But normally if you're checking these items within a year, then you should be pretty much okay.
Yes,
and as
ma'am.
Far as
thanks
so much. As far as, yes, ma'am, I just wanted to add too, as far as like your water, you want to constantly rotate your water. So it's always, every time you buy new water, use your old water first. You just want to do that constantly on a regular basis. Because even to me, water can expire, but it also can be used for other things. So I try not to get rid of my water, because it can be used for, you know, the septic tank or something like that. It can be used for anything. So I don't throw it out, but I do try to rotate it so I can just keep the freshest water in my home at all times.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. You're welcome. Thank you, Sister Mildred.
Is there anyone else
for the call? That's the only caller for now. If there's anybody else, please press the 1 on your pad and we'll bring you in.
Okay. Sister Sequela, you mentioned the dollar store as one of the places that you could go to purchase inexpensive items for your survival preparedness kits. Outside of that, the grocery store, your Muhammad Farm staple goods, where are some of the places that we typically might not think about going to purchase survival items for things like, you know, your makeshift bathroom, for storing things in bulk, you know, things like that? Where are some places that we might not necessarily think of typically where we can purchase those kinds of items that you would recommend?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Most hardware stores are amazing, as well as like Lowe's and Home Depot. They have a lot of the items that you'll need to be able to build and create your survival kit at home and your vehicle survival kit. They also have like buckets and the Gamalil sieves and the different trash cans that you can use and tents and tarps. And so those would be the first recommended places. But then you could pretty much find something anywhere. Like when I go out, I'm always looking for survival. So I'm always just thinking about one thing that I can purchase every time I go out. You could buy batteries from any store. So if you go somewhere and you see some batteries on sale, grab the batteries. If you see a flashlight, grab the flashlight. If you just have a few dollars instead of spending it on something that's junk food, take that money and spend it on something that you can put toward your survival kit and stock it up. I found things at Big Lots. I found things at Burlington Coat Factory. I found things at the grocery store. It's just a matter of what you need for your family, what you need in your home, and how much you're willing to spend on it every time. So, yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. What would you say, if any, might be some of the misconceptions that people might have about disaster preparedness?
Yes, ma'am. Some misconceptions. I guess one, again, like I said earlier, it's expensive to stock and store. It can if you get into the risk of, again, trying to be comfortable. A lot of times we just look into the fast-paced, microwavable things. We don't go back old-fashioned like things used to be before we had these things. And that's what I tell people all the time. I said, when you think about survival, you're basically just looking back in the past at how they did things that they did without us having the things that we have now. So, for example, before we had the washer and dryer, how did they wash their clothes and dry their clothes? So you just take your mindset back to those times. So we had you had the scrubbing board and you had the bucket and then you had the line with the little clips that you hung your clothes on and you did that. So those are the type of mindset you have if you have to go back and still survive it. But people want to spend a lot of money on the new items that you can plug into your generator and wash your clothes because you want convenience. And so you have to take away that mindset of convenience and you will be able to survive and it will not cost you as much money as you think it is. And it's not something that you have to do all at one time. You don't have to run out and get everything at one time. And I've seen people do that. That's different than stocking and storing for survival. That's more like hoarding things. And you don't want to do that because then you're going to have all these things in your home that you won't be able to use and that you're going to end up throwing out the tap for, but you don't know what it is and you don't need it. And it's not something that you're going to use at some point in time. So it's just going to be wasted money. You're going to waste your money then. So being able to survive is writing down what you know your family needs and going out and getting the things that you know that you all will need to survive for those 3 to 6 months. Also, that a lot of people don't like to hear about disaster preparedness and survival because they feel like it's just teaching doom and that it's teaching, it's like a negative stigma around surviving. And I don't think so. I think it's just preparing yourself. Like they tell us when we drive cars that you put your seatbelt on does not mean that you're going to get in an accident because you put your seatbelt on. But you're preparing yourself. If you do get in an accident, you're less likely to fly through the window. Now, it doesn't mean that when you get in an accident, you might not die. You still may die, you know. So you're still preparing yourself and giving yourself a higher chance of surviving. And that's how I look at it as preparing it. You're giving yourself a higher chance of surviving by having the things
that you need. And one of my mottos is it's better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it. And we're so wasteful in this generation of time that we really don't realize what we have, what we've been blessed to have until it's gone. And I've seen people who have lost every single thing in their life, and they cherish everything that's given to them because they've come when they didn't have water. So now you have water running in the house. They're like, turn the water off, you know? You know, it's scarce to them. You know, it don't matter who pays the bill. They're like, turn off the water. They appreciate those things versus those who really don't care. So you're taking the time to appreciate everything and be grateful for the things that you have, because there will be a time that we may not be able to have these things readily available to us. So,
and Sister Niambe, we have a caller. Sister Niambe?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. Caller with the last four digits, 5597. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Assalamu alaikum. This is Sister Kino Muhammad. I'm calling from St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Sister Niambe. We miss you.
Assalamu alaikum. Yes, ma'am. I miss you too.
Your guest. What's her name again?
Sister Sequela.
Okay, yes, Sister Sequela. It's the flood that took place in just last night in New York and New Jersey. And if we had a to-go bag and could, you know, just the basement flooded, what will we have in our to-go bag? What could we have on the second floor to help us survive? I mean, they don't have any electric. So I was just trying to think about it, because I know the survival is, most people thinking it's the last days, but it's whenever a disaster occurs. You're going to need flashlights, you're going to need this, you're going to need that. So I was like, okay, so what could I have had in my bag, or what could those people have in the bag, even if they had to go up to the second or third floor in order to survive, because they say they won't have electric on until maybe a week or maybe longer. So I'm like, wow, these plagues are really hitting us. So it's time for, you know, me to grab my you say backpack. That's a good somebody was saying a bag like the airline steward is carry or something like that. So I was like, okay, that's something that rolls. So anything in that area, that's what I have in my mind. But what is it that you would advise us to put in that bag so that we can survive some of these calamities that's plaguing America?
Things that you can put in there, but when it comes to like something like that, the bag is just literally a temporary emergency situation. So you may have, I have touchlights and flashlights in the bag. That'd be my lighting, and some extra batteries for that, some extra food, some extra clothing, a makeshift tent inside of that, some hygiene products, some sanitation products. Just some things like that, just so you can survive for those few days. Now, if they're inside of a building or establishment, for example, if they were in their home and they had to go to the second floor, they wanted to already have had some items in their home on that second floor. For example, like you can have a propane stove, a kerosene heater that's already up there. You can have, again, flashlights, tap lights. I tell people all the time, tap lights are awesome. You can get them. They got more pricey, but you can find them on Amazon or you can find them in Lowe's. And, again, you can put batteries in those. They have the new LED ones that last for a long time. So if they don't have electricity, those LED flashlights and tap lights will help with the electricity. I also recommend the solar power driveway lights. I did that one day, and it just dawned on me. We had a power outage, and I was standing outside, and my driveway was lit up. And I took the lights out of the grass and took them in the house, and they lit up really bright for the bathroom. Not real, real bright, but bright enough so that people can see themselves when they go to the restroom. And I put it in there because at night, if my children had to get up and go to the restroom, I didn't want to have candles or something in there, and I knew that they would fumble around with the tap light in the middle of the night because it was so dark. So that light, those solar power lights, you can get them for like $2 or $3 at Lowe's, or $5 or something like that a piece. And you always have them outside in the daytime, and then you'll just set them in the bathroom at night, and they'll literally stay lit the whole night until, you know, the next day. And so that's something that you can have and maybe put in the house or in the bag, because, again, it's solar power, so if you don't have any way to plug it in or no battery, it'll still work as long as you set it outside the day before. So, Yes, ma'am.
So where do you get the list of things? Do you have an email or something?
Yes, ma'am, I do. I can give my email out now. If you're able to take it down now, and you could just email me and just let me know that you want to listen. I'll send you like a list. I also did like a presentation a couple of times, so I have a presentation with some other things, a PowerPoint presentation with some other items on it that you might be interested in just having in your house for future reference.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Please, I want your email address, please, or whatever you use, or if you got something online that we can go and look at it and whatever.
I do. I have a whole site and everything, but if you take my email down, then it'd be probably easier to send it like that.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. My email is tequelax@gmail.com. TEQUELLAX@gmail.com.
At gmail. Spell your first name again.
Yes, ma'am. Tequela. TEQUELLA.
UELLA. Okay. X@gmail.com. Thank you very much. Okay,
Thank
what's
you.
Your site?
I'm
interested.
Ark Survival Surplus, but I also have like an Etsy shop and everything. So I'm getting my site revamped. So my mom's working on it, and me and my husband were working on new products. So, but you can still check it out. It's going to be 10 times better than what it is now. But if you want to, it's ArkSurvivalSurplus.com. And that's ARK, ARK Survival, SURVIVAL,
surplus.com. Thank you very much, Mrs. Quayle. It is interesting. I definitely want to check out your site. Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, sis. All praise be to Allah.
Assalamu alaikum.
And we have another caller. Looks like it's Scott Kennedy. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Assalamu alaikum. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
We can hear you.
Okay. This is Dr. Ridgely. Somebody asked a question about, you know, how do you go about rotating your products that expire. You have to know how much you're using up. How much do your family use of the product in a 3-month period? Because that's the amount you want to always have on hand. It's the amount that in case everything shut down, you have enough for a 3-month period. Well, then that means you got to get more than you need for the 3-month period, because it's going to expire over time. Now, as you get close to the time that it's going to expire, then you want to reorder the amount that you're going to use up. Let's say that it takes you, you know, 3 months to use up something. So you get enough for 6 months. Okay? Now, as you're getting around to that next year, let's say it expires in a year. So as you're getting around to that, or 2 years, say it expires about, you know, you hold your beans about 2 years. As it gets around to that next year, then you want to start using up the oldest ones you got for 3 months to eat up the amount that you're usually going to need for 3 months. And then you order in the stable goods what you need to replace that 3 months. So you always have at least 3 months supply, but you got to have 6 months supply, because at the end of the year you're going to use up 3 months you're going to eat, and then you're going to replace it. Okay, so you got to figure out how much of whatever the product is that's perishable, how long it's going to last in terms of perishability, then how long does it take for you, your family, to eat that up. Okay? Now, the other thing, we suggest that the people who get the staple goods, that you take your product, like your flour, we suggest you keep in the refrigerator. Okay? Your navy beans, your red beans, your black beans, your lentils, your sugar, your brown rice, you should keep in 30-gallon airtight plastic containers, food-grade plastic containers with a airtight lid. Okay, now, you don't fill it all the way up. You fill it up about three-quarters full, each container. You can put the whole bag of beans in, or you can pour them out in there. You know, it don't matter. But you want to leave about a fourth of it with just air, especially if you're going to have it in your basement. Okay? Because what would happen is if your basement gets flooded, then because of that air, your container is going to be buoyant, even though you have a bunch of stuff in it. But because you have some air up top, it's going to be buoyant so that it should float until you're able to get down there to get to it. But do not leave your navy beans, red beans, lentils out in just the bag that it comes in and put them in your basement or in your closet for storage. You need to put it in an airtight container to keep the bugs out and the mice out, okay? But it also, if you get flooded out, if you have only three-quarters of it full at all times, then it should float until you're able to get to it, okay? But don't just leave them. When you get them, don't just leave them, just put them on a shelf somewhere and think that's going to be safe. No. Your flour, cream of wheat, muffin mix, you go in the refrigerator or a freezer. But the other dry commodities need to be put in an airtight plastic food-grade container and leave a quarter of it air at the top so that it can float in case you get flooded out if it's in your basement in particular. But the key is you got to know how much your family is going to need for 3 months. And then you got to know how long the product, year, is it 2 years? And then you replace it accordingly, but you start using it up before it goes bad so you don't throw it away. But you make sure you have enough to cover the three-month period in case of an emergency. I know that may sound a little complicated, but you think about it, you're going to be able to figure it out. Okay? All right, is there any questions to me on that? Y'all have any questions to me, Sister Nyambe, Sister Kwela?
Dr. Richard, okay. that was great. I have a question for either one of you that want to answer. Are there any more don'ts that, because, you know, we tend to think about the do's of disaster preparedness, but are there any more don'ts that either of you would recommend as far as disaster preparedness?
Well, the major don't is don't leave flour and cream of wheat and muffin mix out for over a week or two without refrigeration. And don't leave your dry beans and rice and stuff like that out without putting them inside some type of storage container. That's the only thing I can think of right now. So, Dan, you can think of anything else? Okay. That's all I can think of right now.
And I'm in agreement with Dr. Ridgely because I actually had that experience recently where I had just got some flour not too long ago, but I did leave it out And, yeah, it had a whole bunch of bugs in it, you know. And I know that flour and stuff does have bugs in it sometimes, like when you already, you know, when you get it, it's just one of those things that I've been told that that's just part of it. But if you leave it out, they multiply, and there's so many of them where you can see it, and nobody wants to eat food like that. And that's what I was mentioning earlier, that you don't want to be able to have all this stuff stored up in your home and thinking that you're about to prepare for it. And then finally, when you have to go through a disaster, you open up your product and, like he said, there's rodents or bugs in it. You won't be able to eat any of those things. So make sure, like he said, that you're rotating those things on a regular basis and buy it according to your usage as well. So that's it.
All right, excellent. We have about 5 minutes left in the show. So, Sister Tequila, if you would, again, for anyone that may have missed it, could you please give out your email address again as well as your website?
Yes, ma'am. My email is Tequila, TEQUULLAX@gmail.com. And my website is Ark Survival Surplus. It's ARKSURVIVAL Surplus, SURPLUS.com. And again, we're going to have like a lot more items on the site coming soon, different bags and different products that I'm getting internationally as well that I'm going to be putting on there, but some of the items have to be tested first and things like that. So just stay tuned to the things that will be coming to the website.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you, sis.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I forgot to tell y'all. I forgot to tell y'all. The Stable Goods 21 will start the ordering process on October 10th. Okay, go to NOIMOA.org. We'll start all your October 10th. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Tequila.
Sure,
thank you, Dr. Richley. Thank you, Brother Carlson.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much.
Well,
I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire, but Lord, I ask you to be my new force of truth. For some strange reason, it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee. Then out of nowhere, you tell me to break out of the country and into more country. Fast eyes burst into Ripley, where the ghost of childhood haunts me. Walk the road my forefathers walk, climb the trees my forefathers hung from. Ask those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came, my family tree, my family name. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peace Street.